the Spirit of Jazz podcast, where music dances with mystery, with your hosts, Bill Carter and Jeff Kellum.
I'm Jeff Kellum with the Spirit of Jazz podcast, and the co-host, the leader of Presby Bop, is here also.
Hey, it's Bill Carter. Welcome to our podcast. We have a very special guest today, somebody I met a number of years ago when he was on the staff at St. Peter's Lutheran in New York, the Venerable Jazz Church. Say hello to Ike Sturm.
Hey, everybody.
Ike, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing now.
Well, I play the bass and I write some music and I teach, and I'm involved right now. There's a exciting new ministry that's happening that we're running at St. Luke's in near Times Square in New York City. And it's a fun, like, grassroots, wonderful crew of people that sort of is along the lines of, we had our Jazz for All fellowship that we created at St. Peter's. And it's sort of like the next generation of that, which is involving, like, co-creation. We're writing music as a group together. We're improvising a bunch. We're writing poetry as a spiritual practice. And it's like a really cool group of people, like college students to like 90-year-olds and folks that don't have housing, and just like this whole, like, everything in between. And it's just like a really, really beautiful group of people. And so we're excited. We just got a grant to write some new music with that community, like, as a group. So it's the last, we're finishing up a project right now that was kind of inspired by a community like this, but this one is like a little bit leaning more into like what's really happening right here with everybody in our crew. And the idea is to try to create some things together and then be able to sing it and play it together and then be able to share it as far as it wants to go. So it's kind of a fun project.
Hey, Jeff, did you hear that? He used the word ministry. Should we pause here and ask, how in the world did you get into ministry?
Yeah, or ministry got into me or something. I don't know.
There but it is.
I mean, I guess for me, it goes back. When I was in middle school, I thought I might want to be a pastor. I was feeling like we had moved from Wisconsin, where I'm from. From Appleton, Wisconsin, a little town there where my dad was a jazz teacher and arranger. Then we moved to Rochester, New York, a little bit south of Rochester, a little town called Honeyway Falls, a lovely place. And in midst of that move, you know, it's a difficult time to move. I was in eighth grade, and it's, you know, eighth grade's tricky for everybody. And I think that time in my life, it was like a really strong kind of spiritual time. And so I remember thinking about that and dreaming about that. But I got really involved in music and really got bit by the bug. I remember my dad saying, if you have to play music, if you have to go into music, that's okay, but please be a baseball player. I tried hard, you know, I threw my 200 pitches a day and stuff, but it's here I am in my music shed. So. There's still time, right?
That's right. Well, and then you took a position in St. Peter's Lutheran, as I mentioned, and tell us how that happened.
Yeah, it was a crazy story. So when I was 24 or something like that, I was pretty young. And I was first in New York City after going to college. And I had this really funky gig on a Sunday morning at the Bowery Poetry Club. And I was like, what is going on? Like, I didn't... Is this what life is going to have in store for me, you know? And then I opened up the newspaper, and there was this big ad that said Lutheran Church. I was raised in the Lutheran Church. It said Lutheran Church seeking jazz musician and composer. And I was like, I didn't know this was a thing. You know, I had no idea. I didn't know about the history of St. Peter's at that time and all the jazz, you know, wonderful jazz players have gone through there before and since. And yeah, I applied for this job and got the job and was super excited and was there for like 17 years. So which took us up to not too long ago. Yeah. So we're up to present day.
Well, that's great. And you wrote a mass while you were there.
I did. My dear friend Dale Lind was the jazz pastor at St. Peter's and is still kicking out in Brooklyn and owned the building above the Bitter End in New York and had a place called Preacher's Cafe and introduced me to all the history and so many musicians. remember way back when I met you, Bill, it was probably through Dale as well.
It was.
And yeah. And so Dale is still a dear friend of mine, one of my very, very dear friends and mentors. And when he retired, I wrote the mass, the jazz mass for him. And we've been fortunate to play that all over the place, you know, different parts of the world. And it's actually led to recently just got asked to write a new commission called River with my dear friend Shanda Rule, who's over in Austria. And she wrote this incredible text, like 16 poems. And I wrote 16 pieces for strings and choir and a big band. And it's along the lines of the mass, but kind of the new version of that. So I'm super excited. We're not quite out with that yet, but it's coming.
Well, let's not get away from that. Why don't we just pause here and play a little excerpt of the mass?
Wonderful.
Is there a particular piece you want us to hear?
Oh, geez. Yeah, it's like, which kid do you like, you know?
Yeah, I know.
I think I'm always fond of Gloria, but it's long. So you can decide maybe the end of it if you've just got a couple minutes or something. So.
Yeah, well, let's listen a little bit to Gloria. That was the Gloria from Ike Sturm's Jazz Mass, offered in honor of the Reverend Dale Lind, who was the jazz pastor at St. Peter's Lutheran, and who followed the venerable John Garcia Gensel.
A jazz mass must take a long time to simmer for a while and then to begin to put the pieces together. Was this a full requiem mass or was it abbreviated?
Yeah, it's interesting. There are a couple things that are a little different about it, especially like towards the end, like in the benediction and the Agnus Dei and the way the form is. We also played through the Our Father, and there's actually like an instrumental sort of lead in to the Our Father, which is kind of different, kind of strange. And it was sort of a musical. There were a lot of things that happened for musical reasons that now have like liturgical or spiritual kind of, you know, ramifications, or like shape it in a certain way. And I like that. I got a lot of guidance around that with our pastors and with talking with different people and studying other masses. But I like how the music carries it a little bit and makes it a little bit unique and different from some other masses that exist. And I think a lot of that's just because of the people. It's because of the people that were involved. We had Donnie McCaslin, our wonderful tenor player. And Donnie was like, well, maybe I'll just play over this a little bit before we get into the Our Father. And I'm like, I think that sounds like a really good idea. Let's do that. But you got to be careful, because Donnie, one other one, I said one chorus, and Donnie goes, do you mind if I maybe stretch on this a little bit? And I said, of course, what are you going to say to that? I was like, yeah, go ahead, you know, take your time. And then he played like 9 choruses over one of them. And I was like, oh, you got to be careful. You know, how much room you give these guys, but it was such a blessing. And we'd recorded all the band pieces and the main part of this record in like 5 hours in one day at Avatar. And it was like one of those, in my life, I have a feeling I'll look back as like one of the really magical like recording days, or days where I felt like God kind of had a hand on what was going on. It was just like, what a gift that it all came together. Okay. It was a really special day.
I'm intrigued and actually kind of empowered by your comfort with using spiritual language. Tell us what you perceive about the jazz musicians. I mean, to what extent are they spiritual, and how does that get worked out, lived out?
Yeah. Well, my background kind of feeds into this, because I was raised in this beautiful way in the Lutheran church. My mom was very devout, like brought my sister and me to every week to church. And that was a really big part of my upbringing. And my dad didn't actually go to church with us, and had this very deep, like spiritual, I didn't know at the time, but I thought, oh, it's like, well, dad doesn't go to church, so he's not spiritual. And then, you know, I had this whole like thing worked out in my head, in the way that people like to box things in or explain things. And as I lived longer, I realized, oh, my dad had this very deep spirituality, and his connection was with music and people. And that was where it manifested for a lot of his life. And he actually was baptized later in his life and had this wonderful experience as an older man before he passed away too young, unfortunately. About yesterday was his birthday, and he died 10 years ago. He was a huge part of actually writing Jazz Mass. That was so fun going back and forth and getting his support. And actually, I've been afraid to write another really large scale piece like that without him, because he was such an important piece of that. And this river piece that we're working on now has been a blessing, because I see him in that. I feel his guiding hand in that. And yet I realize, like, oh, this is working. This is coming out with my friends and me too. But yeah, to your question about jazz musicians, I think like that background for me has taught me that musicians have this very, very deep spirituality and this very deep connection with one another and with God's spirit and with the earth in many cases, and its communities and all these different ways. Like, I just was down in New Orleans last week, actually playing and doing this church conference. And I got to hear Herlin Riley, the great swing jazz drummer. And I mean, it's like something else to hear that guy play music and see the energy and feel the vibrations in the room. It's unbelievable. And the spirit, he's singing hymns and doing at the jazz club, the bar, and just doing his thing. And it was incredible. And I think, you know, I think that so many musicians have this really deep connection. I love it when the church has the insight and foresight to take care of them in the way Jesus would, and also like honor their gifts and bless the church in the process, because those people bring like an unbelievable wealth of information and knowledge to the table, and then they can really run with it the church that gets the benefit of like these amazing players. In recent years, I had this wonderful saxophone player named Godwin Louis, who's just unreal. And, he was playing and this wonderful people that were contributing like really regularly. And so I love that when the church is kind of open to those people and those gifts, and it's been a big, big gift to see that happening. And it keeps happening in different ways, actually.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure at St. Peter's, you were able to care for musicians, you know, whether they were there to play or whether to stop by. They probably got the signal this was a safe place.
I think so. I think over the years there's a real connecting point for musicians, and it continues to be that. There are mentors of mine like Dale Lind and like the great Gene Bertoncini, my dear friend, the guitar player. And I love caring for and you know, being connected to friends and mentors of mine like that. But then also, yeah, a lot of other people that are going through really hard stuff. I was a music director at the church, but especially after Dale retired, there was no jazz pastor at St. Peter's anymore. And so a lot of those things fortunately fell to me, where I got to be with people and care about people and be connected to people in a lot of cases. So I felt really fortunate to be in that spot.
Well, good for you and good for them. So tell us a little bit about your current interests musically. What are you doing now?
Yeah. So, I was telling you about this river project, which I'm super excited about. There's this, my friend Shanda sings on it, who's just unreal. And she's from Chicago originally, but lives in Vienna now. And then there's this other singer we got involved named Michael Mayo, who's this young singer, and if people don't know who he is, I always kind of say it's sort of like hearing Bobby McFerrin when he was like 30 or something, which is where Michael's at. And he's just like ridiculous singer. He's just incredibly good and gifted. And so you hear this like, you know, group kind of like my jazz mass with strings and choir, and there's 50 people in the recording studio at one time. Unlike the mass, we did everything all at once. After COVID, I just dreamt of like, we got to get back in old school and get everyone in the same room and feel the spirit moving and feel the vibrations together. And it was really something. So we're in progress with that right now, and that should come out hopefully in the next year. And then the other exciting piece is, this group that I have called Endless Field. And I know this podcast is sort of connecting to Earth Day and ways that we can celebrate the beautiful world around us. And I know, Bill, I'm always inspired by seeing your connections and your postings of Banff and these gorgeous photos and places that you've connected. You know, we have that in common, I think.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. So, so you have two albums out with Endless Field.
Right. Two albums out right now. One that we did as a studio record, and kind of started out being, you know, we love being outside, my buddy Jesse and I, and we were doing some things outdoors, hiking and running around and stuff. And we said, wow, what if we like played some music together? And so we got a little place up in the Catskills and started writing some music and made this studio record. And when we did our videos, we're like, how cool would it be to go out to these places that kind of inspired us and kind of play along? And so we faked our way along, you know, playing these tunes. And a couple of our friends were teasing us, and they're like, yeah, those are cool videos, but what, you know, I wish you did it really for real outside, you know. And when we thought, oh, let's think about that actually. And so over the course of a couple of years, we went out to Utah and brought a team. We had this National Geographic videographers that we met that were amazing. And we got a solar battery in the middle of nowhere in Utah and recorded this whole album there. And it was so wild to feel how it transformed the process and like felt different to us. We were like not in that like studio mindset of like, oh shoot, my A flat was a little flat or something. It was like, I haven't eaten in like 8 hours. So we just hiked up this mountain. It's like all this other stuff going on. And it was like, it really put us in the moment and in our bodies in a really different way. And so when we put the Utah record out, it's called Alive in the Wilderness. And this person that I know a little bit, this Norwegian trumpet player who lives in Alaska, I just get this cryptic email that says, come to Alaska, like no punctuation or anything else. And I was like, okay, well, tell me more, you know? And she said, I run a jazz festival. And I was like, oh, okay, this is getting more and more interesting. And sure enough, she said, I want you guys to come and record an album like in Denali, like up on a glacier, like up here. And so two summers ago, we went and scouted it out and played at this festival. And then this past summer in June, we went up with the same team and hiked up in Denali and way the heck up there. And, you know, 20, almost maybe 22 hours of daylight or whatever, we'd record at midnight or one in the morning. And then we went down into Homer and farther south in Alaska and up on a fjord. And it was just incredible. And so we were there for a couple of weeks and just captured this new record that we're working on right now. And the change with this one is that we didn't compose anything until we got into the spaces. So I was pretty freaked out about this, but my buddy was sold on it. And we waited until, you know, half an hour or an hour before we were going to record. And it was like, what's speaking to us? What's happening out here? And it was really on edge because we had put a lot into getting us out there and to get this process together. And it's scary to not know if your song's going to be any good, you know? And it's really interesting to see what happened as a result. It's like a much more organic and alive kind of thing. And maybe it's not, I don't know. Time will tell like how it compares to something else, but it was a really fun process.
Okay. I have two questions. One is you carried that bass all the way up there.
Well, my upright is for Utah. We actually drove so that I could have my bass. My bass was actually a gift to me. It's an incredible gift from this dear friend of mine named Nick Bayak. And I don't fly with that bass because it's just kind of too special to me. And it's really risky to throw those things under the plane. So we did drive when we went out to Utah so that we could have that instrument. And we did. We hiked up into these canyons and like pretty nutty places with up to 9,000 feet at this one thing. And we were really like putting in some serious, it's not like a place where you drive and then, oh, let's put the camera right here next to the road or whatever. It was like legit hiking every day. There were usually like 13 or 14 hour days. We'd record one song, but that's what it would take to the hike and bringing things down. And it was exhausting actually, but the real deal, it was really fun.
Yeah. So, and, for our next piece of music, it's called I Can't Feel My Toes.
Or my arm. I think my arm was messed up after one of those songs for like 6 months, but I'm recovered now, thankfully. So.
Wow.
The question is, you mentioned Jesse, but let's be clear about who Jesse is. Jesse Lewis?
Yeah. Yep, Jesse Lewis is my dear friend. We've known each other in New York now for like almost 20 years. And he's actually from Boston, but then went to school in New Orleans. And we just found after a while, we got kicked out of the same band early on in New York. We got fired from the same band. And then we just kind of bonded and started showing up in all the same groups. And we have a lot of common friends. And at some point we were playing as sidemen on so many projects. And we were like, what if we made the rules here ourselves and just started something, the two of us? And it's been a blast.
Well, is there a particular cut you'd like us to hear from Alive in the Wilderness?
There's the one that's coming to me, interestingly, is one that's called The Well. And I'm not sure why that popped in. I normally wouldn't select that one as like a favorite track, but I just was remembering that place. It was near this waterfall, and any of the extra sounds you hear, water or birds or little animals and stuff, none of that's piped in. It's like all stuff that was like in the moment wherever we were. And we kind of feel strongly about capturing that stuff like in the real way, like whatever you're experiencing in the moment. So it might be a fun one to share.
Well, let's give it a listen.
was called The Well.
And I want to encourage those folks who are listening to us to Google Endless Field or Alive in the Wilderness and look at the videos. I mean, so much. It reminds me of Paul Winter and some of the work that he did in Canyon and so on.
Yeah. Yeah. I was really inspired by Paul. When I was a kid, my dad had his Grand Canyon concert and we had it on VHS. And I remember seeing that when I was pretty young and it really had an effect on me. And we got to go to Grand Canyon and with my family. And then I met Paul in New York. He played at St. Peter's and I ended up playing for a couple of his St. John the Divine, like Blessing of the Animals, those giant services that he does. And it was really cool to get to play with him and be in that space. So, yeah.
Well, there's something about the integration of all this, music, nature, the visual art of video. Man, what a satisfying combination. Tell us about the effect of these projects on you. What has this done for you, to you?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I think it's really had this process of, or this effect of opening, like, you know, I've always been really like my very first record is called Spirit and it refers to like the different aspects of the Holy Spirit. And I got to go to this trip in Norway and I just like freaked out seeing like the fjords and seeing how beautiful the world was. And I just thought there's got to be some way to express like the beauty in creation. And that's what that was really all about. And I think I see that sort of getting expressed in all of these projects, even with the mass or the river, or these other projects. So there's a lot of like a lot of crossover, a lot of like cross fertilization of like maybe a secular thing like Endless Field, quote unquote. I don't think of music really as being sacred or secular because it's always the same spirit for me that's going into it. And I think people can have whatever effect, can have really spiritual experiences with music, no matter what any of the backgrounds are. And so I really been noticing that. And then I think an interesting thing that happened lately, I've been noticing that like this thing at Times Square, it's called Finding Our Way Home. And this ministry that I say ministry, but it's really like a, you know, it's creative writing as a spiritual practice. It's improvising. It's like a jam session. It's like you can encounter it whatever way you want. It's in a church, basically, but there's a lot of other stuff happening. And I noticed that this process of improvising and kind of co-creating it's something I saw my dad doing a lot, like with improvisation and his jazz teaching and stuff. And it's really feels like at home for me. And I love that work and being part of that. And so I just did this Presbyterian, like PAM workshop out in Denver, like the Presbyterian Association of Musicians. And we did this with like 30, you know, people in the church and it was super fun. And then we just did this gathering, a thing called Gathering that Endless Field has created, which is like essentially like a music camp for people. It was in Florida and we had like a small group of people, essentially like a band that didn't know each other. It was all people came together at this retreat center in Florida. And we did the same process over a few days. We like co-created a piece together. We made a video together, kind of in the style of Endless Field. Mm-hmm. And it was so much fun and really, really inspiring to see that come together. And I'm noticing that's happening more and more wherever I go, in the church or at in some kind of jazz school or some kind of grant or wherever. It's just, that's what I'm being called to do right now everywhere. And so I'm like, okay, God, like, all right, this is really interesting. And it feels like so many things, I think it's what I needed. And it's this really great gift that I'm able to do this thing that I think is helpful to other people, but it's also like healing to myself and like a part of my journey that was really necessary. So,
well, Ike, it's wonderful to talk with you and thank you for making the time today to do that. Any final thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, I'm grateful to you guys for creating a space like this and for helping people find this music. I think we're all part of this interesting, like, little niche where, you know, jazz meets spirit. And I think there's a lot of room for expression and growth in this place. Like, I think in the church, it's like really, and beyond, it's like, it's just, this music is so great. I mentioned that thing in New Orleans and I got so lit up. I'm like, man, I love, it sounds funny to say it, but I was like, right. Like, I love this music so much. I love the way it makes me feel alive. I love playing it. I love listening to it. And how great when we can bring that into these other spaces, you know, in our lives. It's really cool.
Absolutely. It brings us completely alive.
Yeah. I would love to see the two of you guys work together.
Yeah, it's been a minute, Bill. I think it was almost 18 years ago or something. So
that's right.
We got to fix that.
That's right. In fact, you invited me over to St. Peter's for a Vespers, and then you couldn't make it. Yeah, so I was stuck with Dean Johnson and Donnie McCaslin and Ron Vincent. I mean,
oh man,
I had to settle for them.
Sounds like you guys did all right. That's pretty cool. Wow.
Well, take good care, and we're gonna chase you down soon.
That sounds good. Well, thanks so much for having me over, guys, and wish you well.
Thanks for listening to the Spirit of Jazz podcast. This is a production of Presby Bop Music. To find out more about Presby Bop, our music, concerts, and recordings, please explore our website at www.presbybop.com. And send us a note telling us what you think about the Spirit of Jazz. We'd love to hear from you. Check in with us again next time. I'm Jeff Kellum.
And I'm Bill Carter. Thanks for tuning in.